Hey, it's Cappy, and this is Beyond the Plate, Heard, the audio newsletter where I share what's on my plate, literally and figuratively. From culinary insights to restaurants and recipes, it's everything I'm seeing, tasting, and talking about in just a few minutes. This isn't a peer-reviewed culinary journal. It's just my take on what I'm into at the moment. So let's dive in, and I hope you all take something from my plate. All right, everybody, we've got a special bonus episode of Heard this week because I just got back from Natural Products Expo West in Anaheim, California. This is like the consumer packaged goods show for CPG brands. It's the industry's defining event for natural and organic brands. There are easily over 3,000 brands exhibiting at the show, and somewhere between, I don't know, they say 60 and 80,000 people walking the show floor. So for this episode, I sat down with Alana Schnitzer, who's the Executive Vice President of Consumer Brands at Reuterfin. And we talked about what I saw coming out of Expo West. Some insights, some great brand collaborations, up-and-coming brands, what actually tasted good, and a few founders that really stood out to me and why. So let's get into it. Enjoy this special bonus episode of Heard.
Hi, everyone. Expo West is always one of the biggest moments of the year for the food and beverage industry. And it brings together emerging brands, founders, some of the biggest companies shaping the future of food. And so I'm really excited to be joined today by Andrew Cappy, as most know him. But before we start, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Alana, for having me. As you mentioned, my name is Andrew Kaplan. Most people know me as Cappy. By day, I head up culinary operations for Rachel Ray's brand, and I'm the co-founder and director of her cooking and kids charity called the Yummo Organization. And I guess I would say by night, I host a podcast called Beyond the Plate, where we sit down with chefs, restaurateurs, and food personalities from all across the world to discuss their journey into the food industry and how they give back to their communities. I also work as a culinary strategist and advisor to various founders, some emerging brands, chefs, and organizations. So helping them bring ideas and products and partnerships to life through this real world culinary lens that I've been so entrenched in for most of my life.
And it's amazing. And as you know, I'm a big fan of the podcast Beyond the Plate. So thank you again for joining me today. But we're going to talk about some of the signals coming out of Expo West this year. So from the emerging brands to changing consumer expectations and kind of what that means for the future of food. So if you're cool with it, I'll just jump right in and ask you some questions.
Let's do it. I will preface this. You know, I have this like certain point of view about like restaurant critics. Like a restaurant critic and I may not have the same taste in food. So I don't follow restaurant reviews to a T because we may not like the same thing. So similarly, there's nearly 100,000 people walking around Expo West and not every single person is going to like every single thing. So I make that caveat with whether it's a product or a flavor or a brand or a person that I mention. It's what I saw, what I tasted. I try to zip up and down most of the aisles, but I'm sure I missed something.
I think that's a very good point. As my kids tell me, we have different taste buds. But Expo West is always telling us something about where the food industry thinks it's going. And so I'm just curious to start, you know, what was the overall energy this year? Did you feel like it was optimistic, cautious, experimental? Anything stand out to you in that way?
A little bit of all of those things, but hopefully not the cautious for people, because you need to kind of be all in. I get so inspired by all these founders and brands out there because they really are putting in blood, sweat, and tears into a product or a project. And you kind of need to be all in like for that. And I love meeting these founders when we go there to really hear their story. I often go up to their booth and ask them to tell me about a brand. And sometimes they're really into it and sometimes they're not as into it. But I love to peel back the curtain a little bit to find that story. So I'll often follow up my question with, I like look at them and kind of like this. And I'm like, what's your real story? Give it to me. And then you wind up getting this like real, like in the weeds story, which is the impetus of oftentimes why they started the brand, you know, in a way. So yeah, I think they need to be all in. And I like to uncover what differentiates their products from other products. and how people are finding out about their product as well. Its ingredients, its formulas, its cost of goods, its distribution, its marketing, its flavor. There's so many components, if you will.
And going off of that, I mean, you've been to Expo West before. What felt different this year? Anything in particular?
Well, I come from the media world with my Rachel Ray work. I spend a lot of time in it. So I was always curious the past couple of years when I was there, why there were not more celebrities on hand that were behind brands, whether they were investors, whether it was an endorsement deal, an equity stake, whatever it was. Because as we know, there are a lot of celebrities behind brands. And I actually thought it was pretty cool the first couple of years. I was like, oh, that's nice. It's not CNBC celebrity show, if you will. But I actually started seeing a lot more celebrities this year at Expo West. I mean, I personally saw probably around 5 to 7, and it was really interesting to read the room, if you will, and see how they were involved and how intentional or not it was. Oftentimes it was, because if you're at Expo West, like, you got skin in the game, you know, you want to be behind that brand. So I think celebs were a big thing. You had Brooklyn Beckham there with his Cloud 23 hot sauce. Chrissy Teigen and John Legend were there with their Cravings brand. Vanessa Hudgens was there with her Cali Water brand. Jennifer Garner was there with Once Upon a Farm. And there's reasons why all these people are there, and on, you know, other folks as well. So intentionality, I think, is huge when it comes to celebrities and their alignment with brands. The other thing that I would say I saw, it didn't not necessarily felt different, but I took notice to, was the collabs. And if you have a good marketing person, you have great collaborations, and a PR person, I should say. But there were a lot of coffee collaborations, ton of coffee on the floor, a lot of people teaming up with local baristas from the area. It's in Anaheim, California, near Los Angeles. So a lot of local baristas. There was a marketing company that was pretty strong on hand called Pro Mobile Marketing. I believe they're based in New York, but, you know, they do Liquid IV and a bunch of different brands. But it helps, you know, when a brand puts some money into the marketing of their product, it's helpful. But then you have kind of the guerrilla marketing, if you will. There's a woman I saw who has a brand called Sababa Foods, and she was super kind and was wearing a clear backpack with all of her products and had a great conversation. And she wound up, I don't even think she had a booth, but she was collaborating with this company called Fearless Eggs that I'm familiar with. They're based out of Chicago. It's like a pasteurized whole egg product. Really neat. So they did a fun collab. And then you had Little Sesame Hummus did a really neat one with Yellowbird Hot Sauce, which is a brand that I love. So if you see a brand you love and that you trust and you have an affinity to collaborating with another brand, like, what a strong moment that is to bring in a new consumer to your hand, which is probably the goal for both people, you know?
I love those examples. And it's something we always talk about too, is like, even if you can't have a booth or, you know, pay all this money to be at a show, how can you still show up in a meaningful way? And, you know, I've done stuff like that in the past where we haven't been an event sponsor, but we've shown up in it in a really cool way. And I saw something else from a date company. I think it was like Gatto Dates, maybe. And they did something there too at Expo West that was really fun and interesting because they couldn't have a booth, but they wanted to still be there. So I love those examples.
A lot of dates at Expo West this year too. A lot of date covered things. Date coffee, there was a company that did. I'm a date fan, so I wasn't complaining.
Love dates, but yeah. So beyond the products themselves, was there anything you noticed about the founders behind the brands? So any shifts in the kinds of entrepreneurs that are entering food right now? Obviously, as you talked about, there are some celebrities and things like that, but anything else?
Nothing that specifically stood out with me. I mean, I like to feel the energy off of various founders. You have the ones that are shouting from the rooftop, and you have the more quiet ones, which I get both sides. I'm a quiet person, but I love engaging with the loud ones to see what they're really talking about. And, you know, you have the founders of Kushi. It's a breadcrumb company, or crouton. They started with croutons, but they make breadcrumbs now.
We bought them last night.
Did you? How funny.
Jeremy bought them last night.
Kushi, it's Matt Waxman, his brother. Like, they're great. And Matt has a history in CPG, and they're just like a hustler. Like, they do fun stuff. And their booth was always lively. Every time I went to just go say hey, there was like a line of people. I'm like, what are you giving away here, dude? But they're just jovial people, like wanting to talk. And you never know where your next conversation is going to lead. Truly. Like, you don't know who is who and who's going to connect a dot for you. And is there a buyer? Is someone leaving some company to go to another company and they're going to buy your product, whatever it may be. But I just use Kushi as an example because Matt's a character and they're hustling, doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah, no, I do think you're right. Like, some of those different personalities and what they bring to their brand and how they like personify it too can be really interesting. And thinking about some of those like early stage brands that are at Expo West, were there any that made you stop and think, wow, this could be the next big thing?
That's a good question. Probably so many. And there's so many things that come along with that. And like that question, you asked that question, it made me think of when I go into a new restaurant. I love going into a new restaurant and feeling like it's been there for 5 years or that I want to go back. And I think it's similar with a CPG brand. Like, I'm not like a big gimmicky person, but there was one random sauce company that I just was like drawn right into their booth. Like the branding, I literally walked up. I was like, what is going on here? Like, this looks so good. He's like, that branding popped for you. I was like, it sure did. It was really cool. But there was a company called Pop Nuts. And it's a snack product. It's made in another country that they import here. And there's a plain flavor and a chili flavor. And again, this guy was so excited to share Pop Nuts with me. They're basically like peanuts that are baked in this crispy corn shell. And they're like very addicting and poppable and probably a great bar snack too. But Pop Nuts, they were delicious. And I will be curious. I'm curious to see when people see something in another country that they bring here, like, will it take off? Like, is there an appetite for it? I'm curious about that too. But then on the flip side of that, you have like Purely Elizabeth, which is not small. They're not Nature's Valley or like a massive CPG brand, but they're still like so passionate about it. And they're still innovating. And Elizabeth is still there behind the booth. And, you know, I love kind of both sides of that when it comes to the early stage brands.
Yeah. And one thing when you were just talking to about the hot sauce brand, I was reading actually this morning in a new High Sobriety like status report on groceries. And one of the things that they were talking about and had uncovered is that packaging really decides relevance. And that resonated with me too, just as you think about all the different amazing packaging on these brands, everything from like Poppy to Fishwife to, you know, whatever this hot sauce brand was, like that can really influence your decisions and your perception of the brand. One thing that we spend a lot of time thinking about is how emerging food brands connect with consumers beyond just the product. So was there something that a young brand did on the show floor that really stood out in terms of storytelling or how they were connecting with consumers on site beyond just selling the product?
I'll stop with Kushi, but they came to mind, you know, just again, just because they're always talking to people. They were showing new packaging. Even the product wasn't there, but, and that's kind of a decision you make internally, like, do we show it or not? They did, of forthcoming items. You know, I always say, like, I love going to the North Hall at Expo West, which is more of the emerging brands, and there's thousands of them. But in that emerging brand hall, like the bigger fish in the sea, if you will, are Siete Foods and like Goodles. And I get they probably have different budgets than like some of the other brands, but Goodles does some neat stuff. I mean, they made an investment years ago where at their booth, they have a conveyor belt that just goes across. And so when they're plating up their mac and cheeses and putting it in a dish, it's pretty efficient, but it's really fun to see too, because I don't know, you know, if you've seen these, but someone was talking to me about them the other day, like the robot sushi restaurants or the conveyor belt sushi restaurants.
And that's what you were going to say, yes.
It's fun. So it is. Goodles made that investment years ago. As I walked up to the booth, I heard someone say, oh, I wonder if they have their conveyor belt this year. So clearly someone remembered that. But I think there's little like touch points that brands can do to make people remember. And it's like, it pains me a little bit when brands put out all this money and don't do anything, or they just have their product on a table and they're not even sampling it. It feels like a little bit of a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, I loved what Goodles did too. I think they had like their charm bracelet activation too, and just really engaging and leaning into trends of today and getting people to want to come there for more than just the product.
The charm bracelet, so Kushi had a charm, Goodles had a charm. There was about, don't quote me, somewhere between 5 and 10 brands that had a charm. And there was a company, I don't know if it was like an investment company maybe, that created the scavenger hunt.
Smart.
And so you go around and collect these charms. And again, when I was up at Goodles booth or Kushi, people would come up as part of the scavenger hunt. It was a good idea.
Love that. Did you see any categories like where the startups were clearly out innovating the big companies?
I think anything with like cleaner and more natural ingredients gets seen and innovation is getting there. But as always with that stuff, I'm all about cleaner, more natural ingredients. But what does scaling look like? That's when it gets hard. Are you able, cost of goods and manufacturing? Like there's a lot of elements that go into that, which look, you look at someone like Frontera that got acquired by ConAgra. Is it the same exact ingredients as they're scaling into thousands of more stores? Or you look at Poppy or you look at Siete Foods, and it's nice to see a brand maintain its value and ingredients and things like that. But I love like the newer, smaller brands and the cleaner foods, but scaling is not easy. We all want quick and convenient and affordable, but sometimes those things are hard to balance all.
Yeah, seeing how they all influence each other has always been interesting to me, just because I've worked with startups, I've worked with some of the biggest companies in the world and in food. And so seeing how they learn from each other from an R&D perspective and that scaling point is so, I mean, it's so true. That's why these brands get acquired and, you know, sell, because they want to increase their scale, but then stay true to who they are. And so I've been impressed with some brands that have been able to do that, like Stacy's and, you know, Stacy's Pita Chips or even Larabar, like some of these brands that really stayed true to their ingredients and their purpose, but are also a part of bigger companies now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'm a fan of Made Goods products, but I believe they own like all their manufacturing. They have all their relationships with their farmers. That's very different and a lot of work rather than finding like a co-manufacturer. And once you hit a certain level, is that co-manufacturer going to be for you, or do you need a new one to fulfill your distribution needs?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and even just building off of what you were just saying, you know, like where these massive CPG companies are there and then these tiny startups, but were there any interesting, I don't know, did you notice any interesting dynamics between the two this year?
Yes. Really quickly on the last topic about categories with startups, red sauce, marinara sauce, like it's still a thing. I don't know if it's because all the Rao's hubbub and, you know, now you have Carbone in there, but there's more and more of these sauces. And I'm like, what makes you different than the other one type thing? But also a lot of the times they're pretty good quality. And so what are the ragus of the world? Like those big brands that, you know, were huge in the 80s and 90s and beyond. What are they going to do to keep up with the cool kids at Carbone? But you were asking about like bigger CPG companies.
Yeah.
And like sharing the foot.
Any interesting dynamics between, you know, the big and the small this year?
You know, it's interesting. I alluded to what they call the North Hall there, which is more the emerging brands. And then there's the other halls, which are like the Unilevers, Crafts, General Mills, et cetera, et cetera. And I never really like stopped to think about it. But when I thought about it afterwards, these big brands, I feel like are there like almost because they have to be there. And yes, they're getting work done and they have money usually for these big installations. But I feel like a lot of these small brands like want to be there, you know, they have to be there, but in a different way. And they like want to show up. And it's like a really interesting dynamic. You know, you have PepsiCo Foods showing like their Naked Chips and pretty big brand, I guess, not massive, but like Amy Lou Foods, you know, their sausages showing like a new breakfast sausage. And that's also what I love. It's like, what are you doing to stand out? Like back to collabs. If I'm launching a new English muffin, I'm going to find like an incredible breakfast sandwich place in LA or nearby and do something to cause a little buzz. Goodles, as we mentioned, they create buzz. Siete does a fun thing creating buzz. They did breakfast tacos at their booth one of the mornings, which was fantastic. So I don't know. There's random things you come across, you know, as you see all these different brands. Zahav Foods was there, which I forgot if I mentioned or will mention, but but you know, they were doing a couple fun, they did like a hummus hour instead of a happy hour, where they brought some of their Salatin little apps from the restaurant for people there. And then they did a Boreka collab with a guy from LA. So out of like that stuff, I put in my calendar with a reminder of like, stop by that booth at that time type thing.
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, I think those ways of like collaboration and showing how your product can be used in different ways is interesting too, because we talk a lot about getting into new occasions. So whether it is using a typical like chip as an ingredient, but like how you're infusing some of these products into different occasions. And I know some brands, you know, it seemed like breakfast definitely seemed to be a thing too. Like I know Sweet Lawrence came out with new scones and new breakfast bars, oat bars, and kind of entering that space. But then like, how do you show the practical use case of it too? And so thinking about what you shared about like Siete or, you know, all of these.
Yeah. And it's another fun and challenging thing to work through of what is one extreme of that or the other. What is another occasion? It's a brilliant way to think about it. What is the everyday use? Like, sure, people are putting red sauce on pasta, but can I turn that red sauce into a shakshuka sauce, which is like having a moment? Or you want to be there for people, like in the kitchen, if you will, but what's one step further, not the like marinara sauce martini, you know what I mean? But something like, oh, actually, that sounds good. I'm going to do that type thing, kind of push them a little bit without pushing them.
Well, you spend most of your time talking to chefs and founders and food leaders. You do that on your podcast all the time. Did anything you saw at Expo West connect to conversations you've been having recently?
We talk about snacks on the podcast and whatever comes up next. Naturally, sometimes like I literally one episode we were interviewing Manit Chauhan, who's on Food Network. She was like on Guy's, you know, tournament of champions and whatnot. And she was sitting there like snacking the whole time. And finally, I'm like, Manit, what are you eating? She's like, oh my gosh, you have to try these. It was like an Indian spiced Chex Mix style product. But I like love knowing what these people are. I mean, they're real people. What are you snacking on? What are you buying? What catches your eye, you know, as a professional chef? So yes, chefs cook, but they also have a voice too. So I don't know. When I see people like Spike Mendelsohn entrenched in CPG world, or Michael Solomonoff and his business partner, Steve Cook, who I just mentioned from Zahav, I'm kind of changing gears-ish, but like chefs are powerful. Like they have a voice. People listen to them. It's why I started Beyond the Plate in the first place. Like they're the most generous people and they have a powerful voice and they're talented as heck.
Definitely all related. And speaking of some of those founders and even chefs, but if you could bring three founders you saw at Expo West on to Beyond the Plate, who would they be and why?
I could probably turn Beyond the Plate into an emerging brand podcast and record at Expo West and have like years worth of content. Because as I like to say, like everyone has a story. And that's how I feel like on our normal Beyond the Plate episodes with a chef from Italy to a chef from Mississippi. Like they all have a story. There's these threads that get woven between them. But not to avoid your question, but three founders that I saw at Expo West, if I could bring on to Beyond the Plate, a few come to my mind. The first one is a woman named Emily, who founded a company called Evergreen. They're a frozen waffle company, and they just announced pancakes. Emily is just this really friendly, smart woman who I believe they're based in Chicago, but they're a little all over the country. They have pretty decent distribution with their product. And if I remember correctly, she needed to find a way. She needed to solve a problem, which is why a lot of these brands start. Like she needed to find a way to get more nutritious and delicious food into her kids that weren't eating. And so this was her way. She was adding ingredients to waffles and making them in her homemade, you know, little waffle maker at home. And she's got a really cool brand. Speaking of branding and packaging, you should check out Evergreen. They do a great job. And their booth, they do a great job. They're all wearing these pink jumpsuits and it makes you like wonder what's going on over there type thing. So Emily from Evergreen would be fun to talk about her story and her growth. Elizabeth, we mentioned Purely Elizabeth. There's another granola brand I love two out of San Francisco, not as big as Purely Elizabeth, called Nana Joe's, which also has a great story. So I'm cheating. I'm doing two granola founders into one episode. That's what we do. We try to get creative with our episodes. But Nana Joe's founder, as well as Purely Elizabeth. And Purely Elizabeth, as I mentioned, like they're bigger, but Elizabeth is still a founder and she's still involved and they still stay true like to their values. And then the last one is really interesting. And I feel like our podcast would do a good job at bringing out this story. It's a company called Circ. And I only know of them because someone who I know randomly sent me a message saying, you should check out this company's packaging. And it was really neat packaging. And I saw them at Expo West, which I had never seen them in the past. And it's this founder, Chris, who's this quieter, brilliant man and used to do manufacturing for baked goods. And he had this like epiphany moment when he was in China once and hadn't had a meal and went across the street to a convenience store and saw a similar packaging. I think he makes the pack, like their own packaging. They're like little like protein balls or snack balls, you know, type thing. And look up Circ. It's hard to like explain. Each ball has its own like compartment. So Chris, I was like talking to for like 15 minutes. There's more coolness to his story that I'm not going to get into. But yeah, I would say Chris from Circ, Emily from Evergreen, and Elizabeth from Purely Elizabeth. That answer could have been like 30 seconds, but sorry.
I like it. And I like the difference between each of them too. So you were talking about their stories, but what's your favorite story to tell from this year's show? Anything come to mind?
100%. So this, I've told this story multiple times because I didn't see it coming and that you can't plan for a story like this. And I have a feeling that other people have a similar story. So I'm walking down the aisle and there's this big booth for like a Big Bear ice cream or Brown Bear ice cream. Apologies to the brand. I forgot the exact name, but long and the short of it is it's an ice cream that's sweetened with honey. And so as I start to walk up to it, I see this kid, teenager, like eating the ice cream and like under his breath, he's like, that ice cream's the best I've ever had. And I like turn as I'm passing him and I turn, and I said, who do you know at that company? You know, like jokingly. And he's like, no, a man, I swear. He's like, it's just so good. I was like, you're telling me you're just here by yourself, standing in the aisle, raving about this ice cream brand. He's like, I swear, I don't know anyone. I was like, I don't believe you. And I keep walking. I go up to the company and I was like, well, apparently this kid says you make the best ice cream. They're like, what kid? I was like, are you all punking me? Like, you all are in cahoots for sure. And the kid winds up coming back. And I'm like, you tell me, like, you two don't know each other. And they didn't. And I was like, what are you doing here, kid? His name is Sean Goldberg. And he's starting his own CPG. He's 17 years old. He lives in New Jersey. He's starting his own CPG brand called Goldie. It's a lemonade sweetened with Manuka honey, which I'm a huge Manuka honey fan. And so he, like, had me. And he has a whole story, which you could probably see on the site. And I was like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm launching this product. He had prototypes and sell sheets, like all this stuff, you know, promotional materials. And I'm like, who are you here with? Like your parents? He's like, no, I came up by myself. I was like, how do you know about this? He's like, just doing my research. I'm like, do you have a parent in the industry? He's like, no. And he's like, I just saw a little bit of a white space for what I wanted to do. And I'm like, man, and I like took a selfie with this kid. I don't take selfies. I'm around plenty of cool chefs and other celebrity type people. But Sean, I took a selfie with. And I gave him like my card. I was like, keep in touch. I'm like, this kid, whether it's this lemonade that takes off or his second project or third or whatever it is, it was the funniest story. I wound up like walking down the aisles. I'm like, you got to find this kid Sean down there. You know, like I was telling other people about him. It was pretty funny.
That's so amazing. I love that story. And I love hearing about these people who are just so passionate. And so it goes back to what you were talking about before too, with just these founders who have these incredible stories. They're finding the white space and they're just doing it. And it's amazing. And I'm going to look up Goldie too and follow that journey because it'll be amazing to see where he goes.
Yeah. It's like, where's the white space? What's the problem you're trying to solve type thing? And he has one in his mind and I respect the heck out of that, which is why I bring up like the red sauce thing. I'm like, why are we starting another red sauce brand? Like why your brand compared to another? And it's not always easy because sometimes you do make the best red sauce or the best hot sauce or the best flavored aioli or whatever it is. Doesn't necessarily mean you should start a brand and be on a shelf. But if you have that passion and drive and are solving for something and have great marketing and all the things.
This has been great. I'm going to ask you one last question before I let you go. It's kind of a broad one, but what are you most excited about coming out of Expo West this year?
I'm most often excited. I feel the similar excitement that I do year after year, and it's the passion from these people and the people behind the brand, whether they're a founder or someone just so invested in the brand or the product. And, you know, I mentioned the restaurant analogy like earlier, but it's like the same as when I'm in a restaurant. The restaurants excite me when I go in and I feel great energy, and or when I read a menu and I think to myself like, oh man, I can't wait to come back here and try more. And it, also, of course, the food's great, the drinks are great, the service is great, but it's similar with CPG. So I want to buy an item and I want to love the story. I want to love the packaging. I want to love the taste. Taste and mouthfeel, like don't give me something that is not good, but I want to love the taste so much that I tell someone else about it and I want to try another flavor or their next product launch. And actually, it's a nice place to wrap because that's heard our audio newsletter. It's literally what I'm doing is I'm shouting out various brands and products and ingredients that I love so much that I want other people to try, or I've heard so much about them, haven't tried it myself, and I'm like excited to do so. So I'm kind of sharing that. So
Cappy, thank you. Again, this was just really great to hear your perspective and your insights. And I really enjoyed this conversation. So I really appreciate it. And for everyone, you know, if you're interested in how emerging brands or health trends and food and consumer behavior are kind of shaping the future of food, this is a space that I, along with my Ruderfin brand experience team, is watching very closely. So keep an eye out for more and obviously listen and follow Cappy on LinkedIn, on his podcast, Beyond the Plate, and his Herd audio newsletter. But this has been great. So just thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for listening to Herd, a production of Beyond the Plate. You can find all the links and handles I mentioned in the show notes. If you like this, then tap the follow button and tune in for more Herd, where I share what I'm seeing, tasting, and loving lately in food and hospitality. And if your friends and family may enjoy it, I hope you'll share it with them. Until next time.